Hey there, gang. This is Scooter, and thanks for joining me here at Fish Toes. Sorry I have not been on in a while. Everything's been pretty crazy. So I wanted to jump back on, and I did get a few emails and a few notes back to me. Nothing too crazy, but just sort of a few more questions actually about the startup fishing and the basics that you need to buy and kind of to continue to move on and fish. So I thought I would kind of revisit beginner equipment and sort of go over that and see, kind of point out a few more details and stuff. It's been so long, and I actually probably should have listened to that first podcast. But I didn't, and so I'm probably going to reiterate a ton of things I have in there, but I thought I would do my best to sort of clarify up a few things. So we're going to call this episode, Beginner Equipment Revisited. So if you're new to fishing, and I'm assuming if you kind of got through those first few episodes and stuff that I've done and a couple here in season two, that you've probably already got some fishing equipment. And so some of the bigger questions actually had to do with types of rods and reels and fishing line and stuff and which ones worked kind of better together and so forth. So I wanted to take the time to go over that stuff. So when you go out and you are selecting fishing rods for the first time, or perhaps you've gone out and bought a rod that you could kind of get started with, and that's great. I hope you're getting out and I hope you're getting fishing and stuff. So there are things that come into play that we really haven't touched on. I did a little bit in a few of the other episodes when we sort of talk about the physics of fishing and stuff like that, and how everything kind of works together. And that's the biggest thing that you're kind of looking at. It's one of the hardest things to learn, but as you start to grasp it, it gets easier and easier. So when you're dealing with, let's just say, for example, you have an ultralight rod. Okay, an ultralight rod is going to be something that's rated from 2 to 6 pounds typically. Getting down to the 2 is fairly small, but they're, on a lot of the smaller ultralight setups, that is indeed an option, and you may see that. Now, usually you're getting into more, I don't want to call them custom, but a lot of the times when you purchase a combination setup where you've got the reel and everything all together already in the product that you're purchasing, you're more often when you're getting to the really lightweight stuff, you're probably buying a separate rod and a separate reel. You don't have to. If you see one that's like that, and there are plenty out there available, they're just not as common as slightly larger setups. So if we're talking ultralight, and again, we're talking 2, 4, 6 pound test, give or take. Even 6 pound test is really kind of considered light. But again, it's not going to kind of pigeonhole you in there where you've got to be like, this is a rod and you can only put 4 pound test on it. It's going to have at least some form of range to it. So again, what's happening when you're fishing with a rod like this is the rod is going to have a lot of flex to it. The line, because it is so thin, is going to have a fair amount of stretch to it. And so what happens is when you're trying to catch trout, which are a little bit more of a delicate fish, when you're trying to catch panfish, sunfish, bluegills and so forth, crappie, stuff like that, smaller fish, even if you're going after, you're going to a place where there's a ton of bass, but they're all, 8-9 inches typically, this is fine. 2 pound test is really difficult to fish, even for bluegills and stuff. It can be very difficult to catch them, and it's not usually that hard. You can get them. You can set the drag up so that it's going to pull the drag out, and you don't have to. You're going to play them a little more. You're going to fight them a little more and tire them out till you get in. But if you lose your concentration even once, and you go to lift the rod up pretty quickly because the fish was running, and then all of a sudden they come towards you, if they stop and turn around, there's a reasonable chance you'll snap the line right there. There's just not any room for error, or very minimal room for error. Now, if you're talking wee little tiny fish, that's one thing, but you just don't have that room for error in there that can kind of bite you in the butt. So I'm going to recommend, if you're newer to fishing, that you don't do anything with 2 pound test, but 4 pound test can certainly be a lot of fun and work really well for you. And again, unless you're catching, you know, trout over 12, 13, 14 inches, and I'm not saying you can't catch them bigger. You know, if you're catching bass over 10, 11, 12 inches, 4-pound test you're going to find is you're losing that error of margin, or that margin of error again, to where they can do something you don't quite expect, and boom, you snap your line. So that's why I didn't really want to focus on that stuff in the beginner equipment stuff. But again, if you're going somewhere, you know, a local pond, and you know, you see what people are catching, you know what you're catching, and it's all smaller fish, using 4-pound test is certainly acceptable. It's a lot more entertaining that way, and truthfully, you can finesse fish, your bait or your lure, a lot better with the lighter pound test. You know, that's kind of the trade-off. You get better control with lighter line, in as far as the line doesn't cause your bait to do as much. You can also cast a much smaller bait or lure farther because it doesn't have all the drag of that line. The line is very lightweight, so when you cast out, it just works a lot easier that way. So, you know, again, looking at the combos or looking at the lightweight setups, if you're going to go to like a 4-pound test or so, it's a lot of fun. I use 4-pound test primarily for trout. Because anywhere I usually fish, I'm not saying that I haven't caught them 17, 18, 19 inches, and I've done that on 4-pound test. But if I know I'm somewhere where there's trout that are that big, I'm probably using closer like 6-pound test, possibly even 8-pound test, because I don't want to lose the fish. You know, if you snag them, you know, I was fishing recently at a hatchery actually, and the only reason I fish there is because the fish are absolutely delicious. And a fish came in and hit my little tiny Joe's fly lure. I love those little things. They kind of look halfway between a little rooster tail and like a fly. And I love those for trout, but they're super lightweight. So I was using a line, and I believe I actually had 4-pound test on it, and a nice size trout. Again, it's a hatchery, so there's some pretty big ones in there. I'm going to say it was probably 17, 18 inch trout, came up, hit it. And as I set the hook, it spun, and I hooked it in the side rather than the mouth. Well, when you do that, the fish has every ability to face away from you and swim. You're not pulling on its mouth anymore. You're trying to pull farther back on the tail. So it's fighting me with all the strength it's got. And, you know, I'm reeling in. It's going out. I'm reeling in. It's going out. And you know, I'm in a little stream. It's just a little small area. So it's not like it really get away. But it got really close to me. And you know, again, I'm not thinking, I had been bass fishing and stuff, so I'm thinking heavier line. And as it got close to the shore and I reached down to grab it, I grabbed hold of the fishing line. And as soon as I did, it spun and took off and snapped the line and ended up with a Joe's fly stuck in its side, which I feel really bad about, and I hate doing that. But that's one of the reasons why you never want to really fish a lot lighter than what you're fishing for, and you know what's going to be an acceptable line weight for that. But again, the lighter the weight, the easier it is. I was using lightweight because those Joe's flies just weigh next to nothing, and it's hard to cast out. I even then I could probably only cast at 25 feet, but in a little stream that was enough. Those are those things that happen, and one of the reasons why I try not to go too super lightweight. I did reset up my 2-pound test rig a month or two ago, and I got out and did some pan fishing, and I was catching 4-5 inch pumpkin seeds, and at the time they were gorgeous colored. In fact, actually, they're one of them is what's my cover photo on here. So it was a lot of fun, and they were difficult to catch. If I wasn't careful, I had one of them when I lifted it up out of the water because I didn't have a net. And I usually always have a net when I'm especially fishing 2-pound test. I was lifting it out of the water thinking it's such a small fish. It flicked a bunch, snapped the line. Now, it fell on the ground, so I was able to take the hook out and put it back in the water. But still, so you're talking a pretty darn small fish, and it snapped that 2-pound test after I had it out of the water. So, you kind of want to watch that stuff. But if you're looking for an ultralight setup to get started, again, you know, if you want to get something that ranges from 2-pound to 6-pound test, and try out 4-pound. Start with 6 if you want to, if you're not 100% sure. But if you take out, like if you bought yourself a medium rod when you were out, or a medium light rod that you've got 8-pound test on, take the same lure, put it on that rod, and then put it on one that you put 4-pound test on. and cast it. And you'll notice a world of difference on how far that could cast versus not. One other little trick I usually like to do, we talked about this before, if you're buying snap swivels to snap, so you can swap lures out or put bait holder hooks on it. If you're doing bait holder hooks, it's fine. Leave a snap swivel on. But when I go lightweight, I especially then do not put snap swivels on. I tie direct tie lures because what happens is the extra finesse and stuff that you get in that line, you kind of lose it when you put a snap swivel on there. You've got this little bit of extra weight on the front of the lure that causes it not to work properly. So keep that in mind. If you're looking to be in that medium to light range, you're going out and you just want to be able to fish a little bit for anything, especially if you're taking the kids out and you want to get them going, try and stick to that medium to medium light range. You know, something bottom at 6 pounds, top at 10, 8's a great happy medium for your line weight. And when you have that, again, you can buy a ton of combos that are in that side where you've got your rod and your reel already together. A lot of times they'll have that line on there. And if it doesn't have line, you can spool the line on there. There's no great trick to spooling line onto a reel. I've heard everybody give a million different directions on, lay your spool when you're doing a spinning reel, lay the spool on the floor with the sticker side face up, and then when you spool it on there, it's kind of winding it the same direction. It already has a little memory on it from being around the spool. I've done that. I have a line spooling little setup rig, the little Berkeley travel line reeling, line winding kit. I don't know what you call it, but in any event, it has a like a little pin that you put through the center of the spool, and then it actually has a little spring that puts tension on the spool, and then you hook your reel on the other end, you feed the line through, tie it on, and wind your line on. And I use that most of the time. It works pretty well. Can't say I have too many complaints on it. Sometimes it's more pain in the butt than it's worth, and unless I'm doing multiple reels, I usually just take it and I will put the spool between my feet. I may have somebody else hold it with a pen through the middle and then wind the line on to it. So there's different options there. And again, when you do that, you don't need the whole rod set up. Just take the bottom half of the rod, if it's a two-piece rod, feed the line through one eye at least, and then bring it down, flip your bail over, tie it around the arbor, and you can research what's called an arbor knot, which is a pretty simple knot that lets it go on there, and it, once you start to snug it up, it actually tightens the knot up, and if you happen to spool all your line out, it's a strong enough knot it should hold, but again, if something spooled all your line out, there's a pretty good chance it's just going to snap that knot if it got to that point anyway. So the arbor knot itself typically isn't a real big issue, because if you get clear down to the end of the spool, you probably don't have enough line on there. I do know people that will, put 10-pound test, for example, on the bottom of their spool, and then they'll use more expensive and better line and tie that together. And if you research online, you can look for like line-to-line knots. What are they? Blood knots? I think blood knots one of them. I'm terrible with the names of knots. But there's different knots that let you tie line-to-line and not have any extra, not have much knot there. And then you can tie, that way you fill up part of the spool with a bigger line, and then you only have to buy like 100 yards of better but real thin line, and then you tie that on, and then you wrap that around there, and then you're fishing with 100 feet or so of a really ultra light, or maybe you wanted to get fluorocarbon, which is a little more expensive, or something like that. So there are options there. I almost never do that. I pretty much will put on whatever line I want to use, and that's what's entirely on the spool. You'll kind of learn as you go along, though, that if you're, I don't even know what I have anymore, 10 or 12 setups. And, so I have a setup for, I've got a rod with 12-pound test. I got a rod with 20-pound test on in case I go after something real big. I got, 10, 8, 6, 4, 1 with 2. Actually, I think I have 2 or 3 in that 8-pound range, because that's primarily a lot of what I fish for. So there's just a lot of different options you can do. But again, if you're trying to get, you know, you just want one rod for you and, you know, one for the kids and maybe one extra in case something happens, you know, sticking in that 6 to 10 pound test range, you really can't go wrong. I'm talking areas I'm used to fishing. If you're going somewhere where you're, you know, you're constantly able to catch, you know, 20 pound catfish or, 20 inch, 7 or 8 pound bass, you're going to want to be up on that 12 pound range or even higher. So there's all that stuff to keep in mind there. So I think that should kind of cover us on the fishing rod selections. Now let's touch this a little bit too. So again, on the side of the fishing rod is going where it's going to give you its rating. Usually just above the handle, it's going to give you that, you know, it's a medium fast action or something that's 6 to 10 pound test. And again, the first rating, if it's light, medium, heavy, ultralight, that's going to tell you how much that rod will flex effectively and what kind of weight line you want to use on that, whether it's, you know, if it says it's, you know, 4 to 8 pound test and it's a light setup, the rod is going to have a pretty good bit of flex to it, starting right above the handle down to the tip. If it's light, that whole thing is going to bend a little bit, and you'll notice that it's not going to bend as much close to the handle, but it's going to bend a lot more as it gets to the tip. Now, if you get something with like a fast or an ultra fast tip on it, which is going to be the second rating that's on the side of that rod, it'll say like medium, ultra fast, light, fast, or heavy, moderately fast. You know, there's different things. So the faster it is, you know, ultra fast or whatever, the faster it is, the tip of the rod will bend less. So if you grab the tip of that rod and hold the handle in the other end and you bend it, you'll notice you get more of a gradual arc over the whole rod. Whereas if it says moderate fast, or, you know, a lot of times they don't even have that rating on there, but you'll notice when you bend it, you get a lot more flex at the tip. It's a graduated arc where you get a lot more arc towards the tip of the rod and less as it comes back. So the more flex you get at the tip, the slower it's considered. Because what happens is when you flick that rod up, if that tip can bend, it takes a good bit of force until that tip actually, as it bends, till it starts to actually pull on your hook, which is in the water, you know, to set the hook. So if you do that, it's slow. You've got to move it faster. You've got to move a lot more motion in the rod to get it to set the hook. If it's an ultra fast tip, that tip is actually going to transmit whatever you're doing faster to the hook, because when you flick the rod, the whole rod moves. The tip doesn't stay bent at that point. So, the ultra fast and stuff is a lot better for things like bass and stuff that have a hard mouth. They hit hard, they hit fast. And when you go to set the hook, it's going to put a lot of force really quickly to that hook, which means it moves with strength and it moves with speed quicker. That lets you set the hook faster on something that's hitting more aggressively. When you're fishing for panfish or trout that have a tendency to nibble and they bite, when you do that, you get a little bit more play in there, so it's a softer, a little bit more gentler hook to it. And, you know, so that stuff all comes into play. Now, a lot of these things I'm talking about, if you're just kind of getting out there, you know, one weekend a month and you're catching, you know, panfish and catfish and a couple of bass and maybe a couple of trout, most of the time this isn't going to factor in a lot for you. It's really going to factor in if you're getting out there fishing pretty heavy and you're targeting certain fish like bass. So I don't want to confuse you too much with that selection. So, keep that stuff in mind. And again, if you're going to buy a separate rod and reel, and if you look at that reel, and again, I'm primarily talking about spinning reels at this point, on the side of the reel, the side of the actual spool that's in the spinning reel, it's going to give you line ratings. It's going to say, you know, it holds X amount of yards of 4 pound test, 6 pound test, 8 pound test, 2 pound test, 4 pound test, 6 pound test, or 10, 14, and 20 pound test. You know, they're going to have different ratings. So you just want to make sure that that reel, whatever your line rating is matching up with whatever's on the rod if you're buying separates. The line's going to go with it. We didn't go into line a whole lot. There are a lot of different lines, but again, if we're talking beginning here. So monofilament, the classic fishing line, is going to work great for you. If you want a little upgrade, you can go to fluorocarbon, a little bit more expensive. It's a little nicer in, it's a little more abrasion resistant. It lasts a little longer. It's a little thinner for its weight rating. It's a little stronger, you know, and it still has some pretty good flex. Braid is even thinner yet, and it has virtually like zero flex. I mean, it does have flex, but it's very minimal. You know, so there's not a lot of point in putting braid, for example, on an ultralight setup. And you can buy braid down to, I think the cheapest or the lowest I've ever found was 5 pound test. And, you know, there's just not a lot of point in putting it on an ultralight because any of the flex that you're getting rid of in the line, you're getting in the rod because it's an ultralight rod. So there's not usually a huge deal to doing something like that. So the monofilament works pretty good. So if you've been out there fishing and stuff, a few other little tidbits, and we talked about some of these before, you know, having a pair of like nail clippers or little scissors, something like that, something to cut the line is always great. You know, nail clippers are kind of just the tried and true. A lot of people have them, and they come, you can buy them on a little like stretchy cord where you can just clip it on the side of your bag or on your vest or something like that. So they're easily accessible and handy for you. You know, so you have those. You're going to want a good set of pliers, and they don't have to be expensive by any means. You can pick up like the hemostats or forceps type, which is just a real thin stainless steel, looks kind of like a pair of scissors, except they're thin pliers at the end. That's what I use all the time. They work great, but you can buy yourself a nice pair of fishing pliers that are long needle nose. They're a little more rigid, so if you're going to like press on or crimp on sinkers, split shots, sorry, if you're going to cramp on or clip on those, you know, they have a little more oomph to them to actually press that onto the line pretty good. You don't want to go too crazy putting that on there because, you know, you could end up damaging the line inside of there, and then you catch a fish and ends up snapping the line right where your, you know, your sinker's clipped on there. So that's, so we got our clippers, whether it's a little pair of scissors or the nail clips. We've got our pliers. I actually have like both sets of pliers. I have like a heavier duty set of needle nose pliers, and then I've got my forceps or hemostats, you know, and they're nice too because they have a little clip on the back, so you can actually like put it into a fish's mouth and clip it on, and it'll hold, so you can like let go of it and it's still attached to the hook. There are a lot of different types of hook removal devices that are like little, you know, I don't even know what you'd call them. They kind of look like pliers, but they're bent and they have like a little mouth on the end. You know, sort of like those grabbers you have for in your house that they have a trigger on one end and you can reach out and grab something. They're sort of like that, smaller, and you can reach them down into the mouth and you pull the trigger and it closes at the end. Some of them have like little loops or hoops on there that are designed to sort of grab the end of the hook, and so you can kind of work with them easier. I've never used them a whole lot. Pliers are pretty much primarily what I've always used, but some of them are pretty handy. I mean, like I have used a couple different types, but truthfully for me, the pliers are kind of utilitarian. You can use them for different things, and they've always worked pretty good. You know, that's going to be the basics of what you need. I do recommend you got a little first aid kit, you know, just in case you get a hook stuck in yourself. You can put a little antibiotic ointment on it, a Band-Aid if you'd have to, stuff like that. Now, when it comes to the basic tackle that you're definitely want to get your hands on, you know, you're going to want some snap swivels. You're going to want some bait holder hooks if you're fishing with bait. You know, again, we talked about a bunch of different ones. I'm not going to take the time to go through all those, the sizes and so forth. Jump back to some of the earlier episodes if you want a little bit more detail on those. If you got some more questions on them, don't be afraid to ask me, though. So you're going to want your snap swivels that you can tie on using like a cinch knot, or like the improved cinch knot is typically what I use. But if I'm using anything under probably 10-pound test, just a regular old cinch knot, once I usually hit 10-pound test is when I do the improved cinch knot. And, you know, if you just type those in, you can jump to YouTube. I really still would like to at some point put out a YouTube channel and kind of show everybody how to tie some of these knots and how they work and stuff. So So you got your snap swivel, which you're going to put your bait holder hook on the other end, which is going to be like a line with a leader on it. It's going to have a loop at one end, a hook at the other. And so you put the loop on that snap swivel, close the snap swivel, put your bait on, and then you put your bobber or your split shot a little higher up above the snap swivel on the line that you can fish with that. Some other basics that you're going to want, bobbers, obviously, and your split shots are some things you're going to want. And the split shots, you know, if you pick yourself up a little, they have like these round packs that'll have like 1/8 ounce, 1/4 ounce, and maybe 3/8 ounce, and so forth. So they have a bunch of different sizes. Obviously, the heavier the weight you put on there, the faster it's going to sink, and the farther you can cast it when you have more weight on there. Now there is a limit to that. You know, you don't want to put like a 1 pound lead bar on the end of your line and try and cast it. You'll notice if you're using a lighter setup, the heavier weight you get, if you hold your rod out, it's going to start bending the end of the rod before you've even done anything with it. If you're out and you're like put an 1/8 ounce on there and you cast it out and you're like, I'm not quite getting it as far as I want, don't be afraid to throw another 1/8 ounce on there or 1/4 ounce on there instead, that you can get a little bit more distance to it. But, you know, there is a limit to that. You don't want to just throw a whole ton of weight on there and then try and cast it out, because it is going to sink fast. It's going to snag up on stuff on the bottom. You know, so you want to use the lightest weight typically that you can to still achieve the goal that you're trying to. You know, you want to get it out underneath that tree over there, whatever it is. You want to keep that in mind. So some other little things that I usually always carry or throw in a small tackle pack of some sort. I usually always keep a little emergency rain poncho. If it's out there, you're out on a nice day and all of a sudden, it seems like the clouds are moving in, you'll notice that can be a really productive fishing time because the air pressure's changing. And again, fish tend to get more active when the air pressure's changing. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's going up or down. I've always found it more productive when it's dropping. But it doesn't, not by much. In other words, as long as the air pressure's changing, going up or down, seems to do pretty good. When the air pressure's stagnant, it slows down. However, when the air pressure's low, I've been still pretty productive. But usually when it's constant and high, those usually seem to be about the worst times when I'm out fishing. Kind of keep that in mind. But in any event, so if you're out fishing and it seems like a storm front's moving in, you may find that all of a sudden the fishing really picks up. And, you don't want to have to go in, and there's no point in getting soaked. So having a rain jacket or even an emergency poncho, I usually take a rain jacket with me. But if I'm trekking back in somewhere and I don't want to carry it, I've got a little emergency poncho in my pack. So that's always pretty good. If you're going after bigger fish or trophy fish or something like that, and, you just want to have a good time of it, take a little measuring tape. I've got like a little fabric measuring tape, so it's real flexible and it's on like a little reel, and I think it's 3 foot or something like that, which if I catch anything over 3 foot, anywhere I fish, that would be a miracle. Maybe Lake Racetown, you got some stripers in there, but even then, catching something over 3 foot from the bank when I usually fish would still be pretty much be a miracle. But and then I also have a small digital fish scale. I usually do not take that with me. Sometimes I do if I'm somewhere where like I know I could get some big fish and stuff like that, just kind of for fun. I don't usually keep fish, but sometimes I want to know how much a fish weighs. But it's all in what you're into. If you don't really care, you just wanted a picture with a fish and boy, that's a big fish, that's all you need. You don't need that stuff. But taking your cell phone or a camera with it so you can take some pictures of that is always good. If you're fishing with kids and stuff like that, don't forget, always take some snacks and stuff. Everybody gets hungry. Everybody gets bored. If you're still fishing and you've got some bait out there, having something, you want to pay attention to that constantly. But having something that kids can do, if I'm still fishing and it's getting boring, for me it doesn't. I just enjoy being out in nature, and so I'm listening to the sounds, watching birds, whatever it is. But you can listen to an audiobook. I don't really recommend reading, because then you're not paying enough attention to that stuff like that. You know, so there's some things like that. Lures, obviously, you know, there's a slew of different lures. Having extra hooks and things like that for different types of lures if you're fishing plastics is always pretty important. I keep usually like a little thing of some sunscreen and some bug spray in there. Watch those things, though. There are people that swear up and down that they take WD-40 and they'll spray that on their lure and it attracts fish. I've never tried WD-40. I do know that there have been times, and if you sit down and think about it, that I would put sunscreen on and then I'm handling a lure and all of a sudden I'm not getting any bites. You know, so always kind of keep that in mind that, you know, you want to be careful with handling. And a lot of those things, sunscreens, bug repellent and stuff, will cause your fishing line to break down too. So always just be cautious in how you're using that, you know, and stuff. If you're talking to somebody and they say, hey, you know what, I put sunscreen on my lures, and there are people that do it. Again, not something I've really ever done, but some people swear it works. You know, maybe it's something I'll have to give a shot to. They do make sprays and stuff that you can spray onto your baits that are supposed to be fish attractants. So there's always stuff like that. You know, but in any event, you know, so there's some things there. You know, I usually always keep a little jar or two of the different types of fake baits. So they're like little mealworms that are rubbery and they're scented. And that's more or less lure fishing, but they can sort of be designed to fish still fishing like you're fishing bait. But I usually always keep a couple of those in there because I almost never take live bait with me. So if I want to take a break, I'm going to sit down and eat my lunch. I might throw something like that on a bobber or on the bottom and toss it out and let it sit for a while and see what happens. You know, every once in a while you get a little hit on it. You know, so that stuff's pretty good. You know, but again, if you're taking the kids out, stuff like that, if you're new to fishing, bait fishing with worms or something like that is always really good. I know we talked a lot about some of the other odd baits you can use, you know, bread, corn, cheese, hot dogs, you know, stuff like that. You know, they're a little cleaner to work with, obviously, than worms and stuff. So, you know, don't be ashamed or afraid to try that stuff out and use it to get out there. So, other than that, there's not a whole lot else you need. I mean, there's so much equipment you can get. You know, you can get whetstones to sharpen your hooks and that kind of stuff. Unless you're out there beating them up and you're fishing a lot, taking a whetstone with you and things like that really aren't that critical. And I don't want to overload you. I don't want you to have to worry about taking all this crazy stuff with you. You know, we used to have this tackle box when we were kids, me and my buddy, and there was a few of us that went. We called it Big Blue. It was when they first started kind of coming out with like the cloth-sided bags. And it was like a duffel bag, really, but it just had a bunch of plastic compartments you could put in there. But we called it Big Blue, and it was huge. And we had that thing loaded up. And it was like, but then anytime we went anywhere, we would take just one or two different packs out of it because the darn thing was too heavy to carry around everywhere. You know, and you don't want to do that. It takes kind of the joy out of fishing. And, you know, as you get used to where you're fishing and what they're biting on and all that kind of stuff, then, you know, you only need a couple things with you. You know, when I'm fishing new areas for a while, I take more with me and see what they're doing. Or if I'm fishing at a place I have fished a lot, but it's a new time of year, it's new weather, I'm taking more stuff with me. But after a year or two, as I've kind of got the hang of fishing in a particular area, I can usually know what I want to take with me. And it can be a very small pack I take. I got a little sling pack made by Patagonia that I can fit a couple of plastic containers in it. It slips over the shoulder easy. I can walk around with it all day and not care. And, you know, so I'll take a few things. And you know, every once in a while you throw something different in there maybe just to try it out. So as far as the tackle boxes, bags, and so forth works, it's whatever you're comfortable with. I've fished so many different, or had so many different tackle packs. I'm a gear nut. You know, if I need something once, I buy it. And that's, you know, when it comes to fishing. And that, why, I don't know. When I probably could have made do with what I already had. But I just like to buy fishing stuff. It's an addiction, what can I say? But in any event, You know, you can get a little toolbox. You can get, you know, you could take a backpack and then just go to the local store and buy a couple of the plastic containers that you can fit lures and stuff in. You know, you don't need anything fancy. You know, the fancy stuff can be nice. If you're fly fishing and you're standing in a stream and you're trying to tie a new fly in, or you gotta get a new tippet out or something like that, okay, it gets a little more important then that everything is easily accessible and organized so you can go through and do it. I used to do a lot of fishing in the dark, and I didn't like to have a headlamp on to startle the fish. So if I had a pack on or a vest on and I knew right where everything was, I could pretty much do everything I needed to do in the dark. And, you know, as you get the hang of tying knots and stuff like that, you can almost kind of do that in the dark too. So for stuff like that, it's important. But again, if you're just going out, anything works that you can just fit your stuff into. And the easier you can carry it, the better. So if you're going to walk a mile back up a stream or something like that, you know, you don't want it to be a pain in the butt for you. So you know, beyond, you know, a little plastic toolbox that you can throw everything in, everything else is just sort of, you know, pretty ribbons and bows. It's not necessary, you know, unless you're me and addicted to buying it. You know, I've bought the same tackle box in three different sizes, just because I'm, well, mainly because I'm an idiot. But, you know, it's I would keep everything out on a counter, all my packs with different things in them. And then when I knew when I was going for something, I would pull my boxes out and see how much I was taking, and then figure out which pack it would fit into so I could take the smallest pack that still fit everything I wanted to. I don't really recommend going that route. you just get too much stuff. I ended up giving away or selling most of them anyways because I realized that this one is the one I always used. And if I needed more than that, I'd just grab an extra little pack or bag and throw the extra stuff in there. So, you know, don't go too crazy with that stuff. But, you know, I have a few little other odds and ends. I've got like a little mosquito repellent, like the Thermacell thing, that I keep in one of my bigger bags. So if I'm out camping and I'm going to be, you know, sitting somewhere on a shoreline to fish for carp at night or catfish, I can light the Thermacell up and, you know, keep the bugs away if I need to and stuff like that. But as you keep fishing, just kind of keep an eye on what you're using, what you're doing. But for the most part, you'll learn that you can get out, enjoy yourself fishing with very minimal tackle, and it actually makes it more enjoyable, you know. And if you go out each time and you're like, boy, I wish I would have had this. I have a little tiny waterproof notebook with a pen, you know. If it doesn't matter if paper gets wet, it'll still write. And so, like, when I'm out, or I'll keep a list on my phone and I'm like, oh, I wish I would remember to bring this, I just make a couple notes and then keep going. So, you know, and then the next time I go, I just take a quick look at that note and I load it in that pack. So, I hope this helps. I think I covered most of the things that anybody questioned me on. Something I was really proud of, like, I'm up to quite a few listens now, not a ton. I'm not even close to 1,000 listens yet, but a good percentage are women. And I was really hoping to, that's a target audience of mine, because I know a lot of women, you know, I know a lot of women that fish, but I know a lot of women want to fish, and I don't know if they're just kind of figure it's not for them, or they, you know, don't want to have to ask somebody else how to do stuff. You know, they want to be able to just get out and kind of do it. You know, they want to take the kids out fishing, whatever it is. Doesn't matter. I don't care why you want to fish. I don't care if you're a guy or a girl that wants to fish. You know, I always felt like, as guys, we kind of, not take for granted, but, sort of insinuate that, like, you know, we grew up fishing, at least my generation, the guys did, girls didn't so much, you know? I always thought that was kind of weird. You know, like, it's not like it's a gender specific sport, or anything like that. And, you know, but I don't know if as women got older, they just felt like they didn't want to ask the questions or whatever. It doesn't matter when, why, or how. I'm just really glad to see that there's a lot of women listening to this, and then hopefully they are, or hopefully you are, getting out there and fishing. I just think that's awesome. You know, I like to see everybody fishing. I just think that's great. I think it's just very enjoyable pastime getting out there, and I think it's something fun to do. This has been a wild and crazy year with COVID, so fishing has been seems like it's been really popular this year because it's something, a family can go out and do without having to really interact with other people and worry about social distancing and all that kind of stuff. So if that's you and you're out there and you're starting to fish, kudos, great, awesome, keep doing it. It's fantastic. If you have more questions, I realize I've slackened on my end, I wanted to get into fishing for particular types of fish, and I haven't done it yet because I know how to I fish for certain things, but I wanted to do a little more research on ecology and so forth, or biology or whatever you want to call it, of particular fish, so that I could talk a little more intelligently. I'm not worried that I know what a Latin name for a bluegill is, but I want to be able to say with definitive answers certain things about them, and I just haven't done that yet. And maybe I'll just end up kind of spitting some stuff out there to say, like, these are the things I do for particular fish. I do want to get some more episodes. I kind of want to get back into this. Summer's winding down now. It's a good time to fish. Life's been hectic lately, and so I haven't gotten a chance to put too many of these podcasts out there. And I did actually start some other little podcasts on some other stuff, and I haven't posted them or anything. It's more just me kind of keeping track of my own stuff, I guess. But maybe I'll post them someday. But thanks again so much for tuning in, and please continue with the questions or concerns you have, whatever it is. If there's particular things you want to hear more about, you keep sending them in, because that's how we all grow and learn, and it helps me a lot to know what, if you're listening to this, if there's particular things I glossed over too much or whatever it is. So take care of yourselves, stay safe, stay healthy, glad the election's over, hopefully we'll start to return to a little bit of normal eventually, but in the meantime, just take care of yourselves and all that fun stuff. Get out there, get fishing, tight lines, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.